You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
The report on the whole kind of confirmed some of my own experiences that I've seen firsthand. I also do media research, so I work for this company that looks at different organisations' media coverage, Auckland Council being one of them once upon a time. And so I've seen that there's quite a, I guess a certain audience of people that are constantly giving feedback or critiquing or criticising the council. That comes through in the media. You can see that there's a sort of geographical pattern there. You know, the central leader, there might be more criticism of the council than the Manukau Courier. Mm. You might see a lot of criticism coming from Waiheke Island and Rodney relative to West Auckland, that kind of thing. And then in my job as a community developer, I've seen the same kind of issues play out there, where I see council meetings or other forums to engage with the community, I don't see the community I know reflected on the ground there. Right. You know, I look around the room and I'm like, this doesn't look like the Avondale that I know. This looks like some people from Avondale, but a small group of them.
In terms of the reasoning, you know, that the article was giving or proposing, was raising these issues around, one, the difficulty in terms of the actual process of engaging with council or just, you know, civics in general, the methods of engagement. Is that the main reason you think that this is the case, or is it bigger than that?
It's probably bigger than that. I think that's part of it. You've got the issue of trying to reach all these different and diverse groups, culturally diverse. There's language issues. There's also the forum and the idea behind a lot of the consultation is not always suitable for different cultures. You know, the whole town hall meeting style, like you come to us, that's maybe not always effective. And some of these communities need to be targeted more directly, and that feedback sought more in a conversational and more on a one-to-one basis, rather than come fill out a form or come and listen to us speak to you and then give your feedback later. And I know that council are making moves towards doing more of that, which is encouraging, but still there's a bit of a deficit there. Like one example I'd like to share is that I went to a Have Your Say meeting in Avondale about the council's 10-year plan. This was last year. And I went into the room and, you know, I was probably the youngest person there. I would have been one of, I don't know, three brown people maybe in a room of 40. So off the bat, I'm like, oh, okay, it's this kind of crowd. And then they spoke to us, had their ideas, and we were able to give feedback. And what I did like about it was that they came to our tables and there was a person taking notes. I thought that was a good way to get feedback. But then I had a conversation with someone from the local board there and I said, what kind of return rate are you getting? You know, what kind of engagement? And so one of the ladies looked it up, and it was 6% of people in the FO had responded at that time.
Wow.
And they said, well, I'm pretty sure it was 6%, and that the Auckland-wide average at that time was 9%.
Far
and
out.
I said, do you think that's good enough? And they were like, well, we're doing all we can to get this consultation out there. And I said, well, what does that look like? And they're talking about marketing on the back of buses, you know, radio, newspapers, etc. And it just kind of struck me then that you're making decisions based on such a small amount of feedback that's going to affect all of us. Is it our fault as citizens to not be engaging, or do you need to relook at your engagement processes? And, you know, they said, oh, you know, there's a lot of consultation fatigue. That's one of the reasons why people don't engage. And I just didn't really find that a satisfactory answer, you know. Mm. I was thinking, well, look, you've got to change your model then. You could put some money, redirect some of the marketing spend towards having people on the ground. I mean, if you want to speak with people from, say, the Samoan community, then maybe you need to go to some churches. Or in Avondale, we have a group called the Walking Samoans. Maybe you need to go to them directly. If you want to reach out to the Chinese community, maybe you need to go to one of, like, the Chinese Operatic Society. You know, maybe their church and their other cultural institutions. You need to get out of there and not expect us to all come to you. it can be intimidating, and it's also just very, it's a different world for a lot of people. You know, the language that's used in those spaces can intimidate people. We're already dealing with, in Avondale, a high proportion of people born overseas, so English may not be their first language. And so the whole system is just set up in a way that doesn't encourage active participation and engagement from diverse communities.
Well, that there, you've just sort of provided a whole range of possibilities or ideas that people, I mean, it seems to me at least that that would be almost a given to put people on the ground, or at least like the table story you said, somebody coming to your table, meeting you halfway, coming into your space, right? Instead of everyone always having to go into that council space or whatever the organization it is that's trying to make change, why not engage in a space that is comfortable for those people whose voices aren't being heard, right? Like, we can't just say that if those stats you're saying, over 90% of people just don't want to engage, that doesn't sound right to me. It sounds like it's not a matter of want. It's a practicality thing.
Yeah, and there's just really it's just that there's a disconnect there in obtaining that information and that feedback, because if you talk to people face to face like I do, or you know, other people in my position that work in community, you get they are concerned about these things. All of that stuff that council is consulting on is relevant to these people, and they know that often. But they just don't feel, I think, they don't feel like there's a forum for them to give that feedback. You know, one where they feel comfortable, one where they feel they're truly being listened to, one where they can identify with others in the room and maybe even the people taking notes or asking questions, being relatable. Yeah, and that doesn't just apply to council. Like, you could apply that to any business organization, whatever.
On what you said about there being in the media, you can actually see that certain areas are engaging more because you hear kind of more criticism from those areas. It's not like there aren't ideas or criticism from other areas, but because those ones are the voices getting out there and getting in the media, it's almost like the council has to respond to those and therefore has to come up with solutions for those, because they're the only ones that are trying to hold, or that are being given a platform to hold the council to account.
Yeah, so council, you know, they do have their work cut out for them, and I respect how difficult their job is. Like, it is crazy difficult. I admire them for even trying, you know, but but the thing is that if that is an excuse for you to say, okay, well, we're hearing feedback from this group and that's all we have to go on, well, then you got to look at your systems and processes and say, well, why is that the case? Why is it that only these voices that may be of a certain demographic or a certain part of Auckland, why are they the most vocal? And how do we address that imbalance? Because you'll find that most of these people come from wealthier areas, and you'll find that, well, there's an argument there that they're probably more likely to have that time and energy to put into giving feedback. They're probably also a bit more privileged in terms of their knowledge of the system and how to read that language, understand that language, and respond back in language that the council speaks in. So I look at a place like Avondale and I just think there are ways to get that feedback. It's not really rocket science. It's possible to do, and we need more of that happening. I will give credit to the FO Local Board, who their chair, Tracy Mulholland, and various members of their community empowerment unit, they do realise this and they are trying to address that imbalance. So one of the things that I'm aware of, the FO Local Board is trying to put together a Pacific plan, and they've employed a consultancy firm to go and get that feedback for them. And so it's these two, I think they're both Samoan ladies, and they are going on the ground into churches, into other cultural institutions, and getting that feedback directly. And they're obviously able to speak Samoan and potentially other Pacific languages, and so they've got that higher level of that connection, you know, where you're more likely to get that kind of more detailed feedback from individuals. So that kind of a model, I think, needs to become the norm.
Okay, that was good opening chat. I got in touch with you because your social media page, I Love Auckland, was mentioned in the article, and it was mentioned with a lot of success in the sense that you guys have achieved some initiatives and just a presence on that page. Can you just tell us more about the page and how it started and what you guys do?
So I Love Avondale, I just started that as a personal project in 2014. So 4.5 years ago it was. And my family's from here, like my mum born and raised here. My homestead's still here. I've spent half my life here and like I'm raising my own family here. So I just got a lot of love for this neighbourhood. And I kind of grew up with all the stories of the older generations and then my cousins and all of that, their generation. There's a lot of pride in this place and I just found that it was lacking in the media space, like mainstream media. You know, would only report on something here if there was a fire, an accident, someone died, that kind of narrative. And I knew all these cool people and cool stories from Avondale, and I wanted to share those. So that's why I started the page, was just to capture and document some of what I know and some of what I see. It's a quirky place, man. It's either buzzy stuff here. I wanted to capture that. And I also wanted to celebrate what it is. You know, a lot of newcomers to this neighborhood is gentrifying like lots of other areas like ours. I love Avondale for what it is, not what it could be. And so that's kind of the essence of the page that I was doing. And then through that, I started to meet more people involved in working in community within Avondale and kind of the wider Faux area. And so an opportunity came up via one of the local not-for-profits called Avondale Community Action. They secured funding from the Department of Internal Affairs for a community development scheme, and I was fortunate enough to be employed to be one of those community developers alongside with Leilani. That was 2016, and so I Love Avondale as a platform, we had a really made platform and an engaged audience, and so we were able to hit the ground running with the community development project. Yeah, we've just been able to leverage that platform, you know, to connect with others in the community, to get a sense for the needs, the ambitions of our people. It's been like a real good way into connecting, like face-to-face, you know, through the page. It's been a good way to promote what's happening in Avondale, to celebrate what's happening, to get community feedback about some of the challenges. It's kind of become a touch point for Avondale, I think. I don't know, I don't really want to talk for the whole neighborhood, but we're trying to capture the essence of what makes this place cool and a place we love, while also trying to do some social good with their platform.
So what sort of engagement do you get, or how do you go about kind of getting in touch with people, letting people know about what's happening? You've got like 4,000 people like the page. Are you always in touch with them? What sort of, I've just looked through some of the homepage and I saw you posted up about two people that had met through one of the campaigns anyway, and then they still have dinner now together.
Yeah, that's an awesome story. Like, that's, I guess, you know, it's a social media platform and it began as that, but now it's starting to reach out more into the community through this community development scheme. And we're fortunate that we're funded, you know, so it's, before I was doing it just because I wanted to. Now I get paid to run that as a platform and then, you know, try and set up different projects or support other people and make connections out there in this neighborhood. So we've been like really fortunate, and I just want to acknowledge that as being, I think that's a model that every community needs, probably at least a community developer, or especially high needs communities, where they can become a touch point and just be across everything that's happening in the neighborhood, all the opportunities, all the challenges, obstacles, and be like a strategic thinker, just looking above, how does this all fit in, how can we utilize these people better, how can we support these people to do what they want to do. Our whole approach is community-led, like that's the buzz, and I think that's why we've had pretty good success, I think, just as a social media platform and as an on-the-ground community development project, is because we're genuine, like we're here to represent the community and their interests. So we want to hear from you, and then we'll respond to that. I don't really come into this with any predisposed ideas or predetermined ideas. You know, I'm willing to listen and learn. The whole first year of this project, we're 3 years in, the whole first year I was just pretty much listen, learn, observe, and then, you know, reflect on that, and then second year, start to do more towards addressing some of these issues, and then third year, really, really support the people and institutions and organizations that exist here to leave a legacy so that it continues beyond this funding, because we don't want all the energy and stuff that we've created around us to just disappear.
I did want to touch on what you just said earlier about that you love Avondale for what it is, not what it could be. Why do you think there is this focus on development in that sense? Like, it's not, I'm not trying to say that, you know, we shouldn't be developing or we shouldn't be growing or moving or changing or evolving, those sorts of things. But why, like you say, it is what it is at the moment, and there is great things about that, but why development?
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like the million-dollar question, but I think that Avondale has become a suburb on people's radars where it wasn't before because of the affordability of housing. And so if you can't afford Central, you know, like Greyland, Ponsonby, Westmere, even Mount Albert or Point Chef, if you can't afford that, then Avondale is the next best thing. And so you've got these people who have visions and ideas of what they wanted to have living centrally, and they just want to apply that here. And so they see Avondale as being a suburb full of potential. There's always talk of potential. But I don't think that pays enough respect to, you know, the longer standing residents and the essence of this place, which has been working class for decades. There is that disconnect there, and I would like, I think the people get lost in this, you know, the actual people that are here today. Council, for example, is always talking about regenerating Avondale for its future, but I do feel like the people get lost in that. There's a lot of emphasis on kind of the aesthetics of it, really, I feel. There's a lot of emphasis on it looks like shit, so we need to do it up. Oh, the buildings are all like dilapidated, so we need to fix those. And then Avondale is fixed, you know? And no, that's not true. The people here that are struggling would still be struggling, you know? That's kind of where my concern is that the emphasis is going maybe unbalanced towards trying to do more for the incoming people and future incoming, rather than enough respect and attention given to the existing people.
95 BFM Podcasts. 95 BFM is supported by our listeners. Sign up for a Simplicity B-card at 95bfm.com/signup and support independent media from $4.20 a month.